Hey, welcome to Every Night's a School Night, number 55. It's December, and this is episode 55. And we're a few days away from a fifth-year anniversary of the show. It feels like longer, probably because there have been several hiatuses. Not sure if that's right. I don't know if that's the plural of hiatus. It's a word I've never thought of saying in the plural, but I feel like if you spend too much time thinking about how you should be saying hiatus in the plural, you create yet another hiatus, because that itself is a hiatus. Sometimes when you're doing something, you're actually on a hiatus. It's not simply the absence of doing something. You could be doing the very thing you think you're on hiatus from, but you're actually creating another hiatus. But that's getting a little too out there, especially for this early in the episode. The coffee cup hasn't even been drained yet. But yeah, episode 55, five-year anniversary of the show. 55 and 5, 555, like the telephone area code in movies. 555, 555, 5555. Let's see how many fives we got. How many fives you got? But yeah, it feels good to have been doing the show this long. I feel like I should have more to show for it. I feel like I should have more to show for doing this show for so long. 5555. All we got is fives. But yeah, I'm going to go ahead and start things off with a great song by Pat Shannon. He actually, you know, for as progressive as we think we are these days, we think we're very progressive. We think we're able to, you know, bend and mold biology, you know, pretty much at our will. And it's kind of cool. It's kind of sci-fi. But people have been doing this shit forever, man. People have been doing this shit. Pat Shannon, this guy, this singer, for example, he was actually the son of Pat Boone and Del Shannon, both men. And it was Pat Boone who carried him. You know, you would think that Pat Boone would have been the more masculine one, but he actually carried Pat Shannon within him. And they thought about naming the kid Pat Boone Shannon, Boone hyphen Shannon. Fuck that joke. Fuck that whole idea. Fuck that idea. Pat Shannon, who knows? Who knows who his parents were? Although I have to say I'm glad I made that shitty joke or tried to make it, because I like the idea of, like, instead of hyphenated names, you know, that, I mean, it's been going on for decades now. One of my good friends growing up had a hyphenated name. And that's actually a funny story, because my nickname was Stony, my last name being Stonefelt. People would call me Stony on teams. My friends didn't, you know, none of my friends ever said, "Hey, Stony." But on teams and just sometimes, occasionally my friend's parents would call me that. And I kind of liked it because my dad and my grandpa had been called Stony, but the people who called me Stony didn't know that. So it was kind of nice that every Stony just finds itself. every Stony finds itself. But because my friend with the hyphenated parents, his mom was our soccer coach one year. This is a convoluted story, but when are my stories not convoluted? His mom was our soccer coach, and so she would call me Stony. And since there were two Erics, his name was Eric too, I should say that. We were both named Eric. And I've met other people named Eric, but I've never met a dog named Eric. I've never met someone who's not of my species named Eric. What's up with that? I've never met a dog or a cat or a fucking hamster, for that matter. I've never met a pet lizard, anything named Eric. And that's strange. I'll go into that later. But for now, it's like there were these two Erics on the team, and so my friend's mom called me Stony to differentiate. But then she felt bad because everybody's all about equal, you know, being equal, treating people like equals. She was like, "Well, we should call him by a nickname too." And she was like, "How about hyphen?" That lasted 2 minutes, you know. Yeah, everyone called him Hyphen from then on, which would be kind of cool. That's kind of a cool nickname. It's kind of weirdly sci-fi once again. Kind of sci-fi once again. That's my description of everything today. It's sci-fi. That's kind of sci-fi. Someone's dad just thinks everything in the world is sci-fi. But instead of having a hyphen, I like the idea of putting a comma between names. If parents give a kid both their last names, like, I don't know, Smith Huster, Mom's last name is Smith. Dad's last name is Huster. So we're going to give him the last name Smith-Huster. Instead of that, how about Smith, Huster? Let's make things really strange. We need more commas in names. Not enough commas in names, man. But to go back to that idea I just thought of where it's like I've never met a dog named Eric. I've never met a pet cat named Eric. Never met any animal named Eric at all. And people seem to have these predefined, like certain things make sense as an animal name. It just makes sense to use some other name. I've met dogs named Steve and things like that. But there's something about names like that where it's kind of funny. Like, you meet dogs named Fred or Steve or just various human names. But they kind of, it's kind of tongue-in-cheek. It kind of sounds funny. There's something about certain names that are funny when you give them to an animal. But Eric wouldn't even really be funny. That's kind of, it becomes kind of a serious name for a dog. A strange but serious name. It's like, this is my dog, Eric. But it does kind of bother me that my name seems to be limited to one species. You know, there needs to be, you know, more, there needs to be other species that have my name. I feel like in order for me to completely transcend this whole human experience, I need to meet animals who also have my name. And I've gone up to other Erics, other human Erics. I mean, obviously human Erics, because as I said, I've never met an animal named Eric. But I've gone up to other human Erics, you know, when someone's introduced me, and I've said, like, especially when alcohol was involved, and I've been like, don't you feel like your life's a little bit different than it would be otherwise because your name is Eric? And I think you could ask that to anybody about any name. Like, if their name was, like, Mike, I think you could say to them, like, don't you feel like your life is just a little bit different because people have been calling you Mike your whole life and you respond to Mike? But I feel like when it's coming from me, like a fellow Eric, and I'm asking that question, we should really be able to bond and be like, don't you feel like we have a little bit of some special connection because our name is Eric, and in some way having that name has shaped our lives in some way. But speaking of Erics, do you know who whose real name was Eric? Was Ricky Nelson, the singer Ricky Nelson. Rick Nelson, his true name was Eric, and I think that's great. I love the idea of Eric going by Rick, and I actually did try to do that briefly when I was a little kid. My sister had a boyfriend whose brother was a former NFL player, and his brother's name was Ricky. So I think on a couple school assignments, I wrote down my name as Ricky because I was like, oh, an NFL player. That's fucking cool. If I use the name Ricky, I love football, and if I use the name Ricky, that makes me a little bit closer to being an NFL player myself. Being an NFL player myself, you know. So I did that on a couple school assignments. So strangely, like my mom saved all these old school assignments. So if you were to go through those, you'd see just a couple of them with the name Ricky Stonefell. If someone saw that, they'd probably be like, which kid was that? Is that the kid that you guys got rid of? It's like the oldest brother in Happy Days who was on the first season and then they just wrote him off the show. Ricky Nelson, my older brother who never was. But I do think it's really cool that Ricky Nelson's true name is Eric because I love Ricky Nelson. And so I think if I were to explain it to somebody now, say somebody, some weird person is going through my old schoolwork from when I was a kid, I would tell them, oh, I did that because of Ricky Nelson. I was such a big Rick Nelson fan that I did it because of him, which would be a lie. I believe they call that revisionism. That'd be some personal revisionism. But I do remember that I was going to play a song here, and it's by Pat Shannon, and it's called Awaiting Love. And I know that you've been awaiting it. So here we go.
Your arms, my arms, are waiting for each other. Your lips, my lips, are waiting for no other. Your heart waiting for no other.
I heard that song, I thought I knew how it was gonna go, and I thought it's all right. As it goes, it just opens up, his voice opens up, and from there I was just like, this is a great song, this is a great one. And usually with songs I can tell within the first few seconds if I'm gonna like it. I can't necessarily tell if it's gonna be a song that just blows me away, but I can usually tell if it's just something that's going to, you know, pass my, just my most basic test, the test of taste. And it's usually the rhythm, but more importantly, the melody. Once the melody kicks in, I can tell if I'm going to like a song, because a great melody doesn't even need that great of a vocal delivery. If the melody's powerful enough, it almost enhances whatever's there. Somebody can be mumbling. I mean, it's like I was talking about in the last episode about that, Albert DeSalvo serial killer song, where it's spoken word over a great doo-wop melody, and it doesn't even matter that it's spoken word, it doesn't even matter what the voice sounds like, because the melody is good. And in the same way that sometimes somebody talking in a movie over a great soundtrack makes you feel like those lines are just great, but really it's just that weird magical effect of music combined with voice. But yeah, overall, I can generally find out if I like a song from just the first taste of the melody. And we live in a time where I feel like rhythm is emphasized now more than ever. Maybe as much as it was when we first started developing music as a species, and it was only rhythm, pounding on things. But, you know, a lot of the music that's been popular the last couple decades is very rhythm-based. R&B, rap, electronic music. And I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that. I'm not here to trash that stuff. But for me, it doesn't do the trick. It doesn't do the right trick for me. Whereas a nice soaring melody just does something to me. It enhances every aspect of my life. I can be, you know, going for a run, and I don't listen to music when I run in most cases, but just having that feeling of melody somewhere in the back of my brain just adds to every aspect of my life. It adds an element of heroism or something, and maybe being a metal fan, that's part of it, because that's very melody-based, and this music is too. Even though a lot of this music is downcast, a lot of doo-wop and teen pop is very downcast, it doesn't make me feel sad, and I don't listen to it when I'm sad or any of those reasons. You know, I know a lot of people listen to certain kinds of music because it kind of provides a soundtrack to whatever they're feeling. They'll listen to Beyoncé Survivor because they just went through a breakup and they want to feel empowered. Or they'll listen to, you know, music about heartbreak because they just got heartbroken. They'll listen to their favorite singer-songwriter singing poetic lyrics you can't understand about heartbreak because that's how they're feeling. Or when they're mad, they'll listen to, you know, I don't know what they listen to when they're mad. They'll listen to angry music. And that's the same thing for that, too. I mean, I listen to a lot of, you know, hateful metal and things like that. And I don't listen to it necessarily because I'm feeling hateful. I mean, it does like light a certain inner fire when you listen to it, but it's not like it mirrors how I'm feeling in that moment or really feeling as a person at all in the bigger picture. So when I listen to this music, it's definitely not, I kind of forget that it's sad music. I forget that it's coming from a downcast place, like that last one, Awaiting Love. And that's something you can't do. You can't await love. The cliche is true when people say you'll find it when you least expect it. You'll find love when you least expect it. And that's very true. And sometimes, not just when you least expect it, but when you least want it. You think about people who go on Tinder and people who go on OkCupid. I don't know what people are using now. I assume Tinder's still around. I met one person on Tinder, and she's one of the people that was like about 4 years ago or so. And what's funny is, like, today we're just friends, and she's like one of the only people I see with any regularity now. So it's just strange that she lived right down the street from me. But it's just sort of funny how those sort of things turn out. But I think about the times in my life, which was many years ago, when I just felt that cloud of desperation. Not that I was truly desperate, but we all live these lives where we're supposed to feel like we either have love or we're trying to find it. We either have love or we're trying to find it. That seems to be the common mentality, and so many things reinforce that in us. Like, where if you're not looking for that, what are you doing? What are you doing? But the more you want it, the more you're awaiting it, the more likely it is to not find you. And that's a reality, and then people try to force it. That's a very common thing, too. There's this forced love that happens where someone's just going through the motions because they feel like that's what they're supposed to be doing, like that will make them whole. And that's not how it works. Very rarely does that work. I'm not going to say it never works, but very rarely does that work. Which is why arranged marriages make sense. You know, not in like an oppressive way where women are forced to marry off older guys in weird Mormon cults or, you know, other societies where, you know, the young women are forced to marry people. Although it seems to always be about, like, when people talk about arranged marriage being wrong, it's always kind of focused on the woman's experience. I guess because typically in societies where that happens, the woman is forced to be subservient and has less say than the man. So that makes sense. It makes sense why women get the worst end of arranged marriages. But if we take that element out and say we were to recreate arranged marriages in a way that where both people more or less have equal say, but it's still arranged, and it's just kind of a business decision. That makes sense, you know, because I feel like Tinder and OkCupid and whatever else, whatever fucking dating site is out there, I feel like those people who are on that, who are just desperate, would be a lot happier if someone would just arrange something. Just pick my outfit for the day. I can't decide what I want to wear. Pick my outfit. Pick my husband. Take my wife. It's the opposite of take my wife, please. It's choose a wife for me, please. I feel like a lot of people would be happier with that. Not me, but a lot of people would. But there is that truth that where, you know, the more that you expect love, the more you want it, the less likely it is to show up. And then, of course, when it does find you and it's not what you were looking for and it was unexpected and even unwanted, and you kind of treat it with indifference, because when someone's like making moves on you, there is a certain truth to it that, like, if you act indifferent, they're going to come on stronger. It's why, you know, women are always turned off by guys who just right off the bat are just like throwing flowers their way. Unless he's like, you know, the perfect man, then sometimes they'll go for it. But overall, like, when a man just is like, oh, you're interested? Well, I'm just going to use this opportunity to show you how desperate I am. I'm going to take that interest and just run a million miles with it. You know, so if you respond, you know, with indifference, that of course like ignites people's interest. You know, you're not over eager. And sometimes though, you're simply not interested. And that's unfortunate because people don't really realize that, you know, you're sincerely not interested, because you don't want to just flat out say, sorry, I don't want to date you. I don't want to date you. Cause that's awkward. You know, it's awkward when you haven't even gone out with somebody, but they've shown an interest, and you just right off the bat are like, not going to date you, not going to date you. You know, if you do say that in that voice, say it with that accent. But it's hard to say no thanks in that situation and come across as sincere, especially because everybody knows, like, guys coach this technique. you know, pickup artists, everybody, it's this coached technique where it's like, if you like a girl, wait a little bit to text back. You know, wait a day or two and text her back then. You know, don't be too eager. You know, don't compliment her. You know, just show her total indifference and she'll be just crawling for you, man. She'll just be crawling for you. And there's some truth to that, which is why it's repeated so much. But we live in this weird, I don't know, this weird dimension where that's the truth, but it's also, it becomes this deliberate thing that guys do where it's like they deliberately do that because they're trying to gain more interest from a woman. I don't know. I don't need to go into it. But sometimes you just got to say no thanks. And you await love and then it comes and you say thanks, but no thanks. And that's what's going to happen here with Joey Cooper, a fella named Joey Cooper. And his song is Thanks But No Thanks, a very driving, great song. This is one of those ones you should listen to. You know, even though I don't listen to music that matches my emotions, if I did, this is one I would listen to. Stop listening to Beyonce, Survivor, and listen to Joey Cooper, Thanks But No Thanks. And it's going to be followed up by another Joey Cooper song, which you should also listen to if this matches your feelings. And that song is I'm a Fool. Thanks But No Thanks, I'm a Fool. Some theme music for you. And those two song titles go together nicely. Thanks But No Thanks, I'm a Fool.
Waiting on you. Well, I told you once, if I told you twice, I try to make you understand. I hope someday you'll wake up and see just what you're doing to me. Oh, everybody's going out having a ball but me. I'm a fool for staying at home just waiting on you. I'm a fool for staying at home just waiting on you. I'm a fool for staying at home just waiting on you.
Some contrast in styles between those last two songs, but both strong in their own right. Joey Cooper, strong in his own right with both those songs. Next, we're going to play a song by Kenny Roberts, pretty well-known country artist, and the song is Blue from 1966, just simply Blue. It's all about how much he loves the color blue. No, of course not. Of course, a country artist singing a song called Blue is about being blue. And it's a song that was originally written and performed by Bill Mack, a well-known figure, country figure in his own right. And I guess it was later done in the 90s and was kind of a hit in the 90s, 30 years later, by Leanne Rimes. And it's got kind of a Slim Whitman vibe here. The Bill Mack and Kenny Roberts versions have that kind of Slim Whitman vibe because there's kind of a yodel going on. That yodeling country style. And that's not something I ever play. It's not something I ever really listen to. But this Kenny Roberts version of the song is my favorite. And he does the wail, the yodeling wail, very well. And I feel like it's a good representation of the feeling blue. The color and the feeling, whatever the fuck it is. I feel like his wail is a good representation of that. Kenny Roberts, Blue. Covered the color blue, I thought we'd go to red. And this here is going to be Red River Dave McHenry. Red River Dave, as he was known, but Dave McHenry was his given name. And that's not McHenry, it's McHenry. There's no H and there's an extra E in there, so it's McHenry. And this song is called The Trial of Francis Powers. And if you're not familiar with Francis Powers, he was an Air Force pilot who was spying on the Russians in a plane, and he was shot down in 1960 and taken prisoner. It was a big controversy in its day. It's not something you hear about much. Maybe you might see it mentioned in history books, in school history books, but it's one of those things that was a big deal in its time and it's just been kind of glossed over. He was, you know, interrogated, and then he was turned back over. There was some sort of prisoner exchange program, which must be insane. You figure the world's two biggest powers at that point were the U.S. and Russia, and you're this man who was spying on behalf of one of them, and these countries, it's this big deal, and these two fucking massive countries exchange you. That's got to be humbling, but also empowering. It's one of those weird things where you think you'd be humbled by the fact that you're just this man being exchanged by countries and you're this spy and that has all these implications. But at the same time, as humbling as it would be, think about how fucking big that is. Think about what a big fucking deal you are if countries are bargaining over you and what you represent. But the Trial of Francis Powers, the song here by Red River Dave, which is kind of fitting because he's talking about Russia, and there's a lyric where he says, in the godless land of Russia, and his delivery is just so fucking good, and it has like some military melodies in there. I can't think of the actual song, but just that kind of typical old school military marching melody. But it comes from an era where there are a few of these quote-unquote novelty records, and as I say in every episode, I hate the term novelty record. I think most novelty records are much more sincere than normal records. But on this record, in this era, there were a number of records that dealt with these anti-communist, anti-Russian themes, Cold War themes. And I almost always love songs of that nature. I find them good on their own as songs, but when you add in that element, that topical Cold War, anti-commie, anti-Russia sort of vibe, it just does something for me. It does something for me. And this song does that. Whatever it is that it does, this song definitely does that. So here we are with The Trial of Francis Powers, Red River Dave.
Was the year when young Francis Gary Powers stood before the Russian bear. They were trying him for spying o'er the Soviets. He flew in the famous plane U-2. Glory, glory, he's a hero. Glory, glory, he's a hero. Glory, glory, he's a hero who flew far on Uncle Sam. Across the foreign waters in the state USSR, for the Lubyanka prison shines a bright foreboding star. In that godless land of Russia, in that vale of endless tears, they gave him 10 long years. Glory, glory, he's a hero. Glory, glory, he's a hero. Glory, glory, he's a hero who flew far on Uncle Sam. In the future page of history, in the ages yet to come, when free men speak of their heroes and the deeds that they have done, they will sing of Francis Powers and the famous plane he flew for the great red, white, and blue. Who flew
to this southern town last summer to show the folks a brand new way of life. But all you've shown the folks around here is trouble, and you've only added misery to their strife. Your concern is not to help the people, and I'll say again, though it's been often said, your concern is just to bring discomfort, my friend, and your policy is just a little red. Now ain't I right?
Ain't you right? Ain't you right?
It matters not to you how people suffer, and should they, you consider that a game. You bring a lot of trouble to a town and then you leave. That's part of your communistic game. I detect a little communism. I can see it in the things you do. Communism, socialism, call it what you like. There's very little difference in the two. Now ain't I right?
Ain't you right? Ain't you right?
Your followers sometimes have been a bearded, bathless bunch. There's even been a minister or two. A priest, a nun, a rabbi, and an educated man have listened and been taken in by you. All the country's got some two-faced politicians who encourage you with words that go like this. Burn your draft card if you like, it's good to disagree. That's a get-acquainted communistic kiss. Now ain't I right?
Ain't you right? Ain't you right?
One politician said it would be nice to send some blood and help the enemy in Vietnam. That's what he says, here's what I say, let's just keep the blood. Instead, let's send that politician man. Let's rid the country of the politicians who coddle tramps that march out in our streets, protesting those who want to fight for. My friend, this kind of leader makes our country weak. Now ain't I right?
Ain't you right? Ain't you right?
Let's look and find the strong and able leaders. It's time we found just how our neighbors stand. If we're to win this war with communism, let's fight it here as well as Vietnam. Let's rise as one and meet our obligations, so communistic boots will never trod across the fields of freedom that were given to us with the blessing of our great almighty God. Across the fields of freedom that were given to us with the blessing of our great almighty God.
Yeah, Red River Dave was back-ended there with Johnny Freedom, Ain't I Right, the great Ain't I Right. And that's a song that was also done by Marty Robbins, and his delivery was very much the same, although a little more Marty Robbins-ish. Turns out Marty Robbins sounds like Marty Robbins, the great Marty Robbins, Marty the Great. But that was Johnny Freedom, and I'm not sure who that really is. You had some people performing under pseudonyms, but I don't recognize the voice, and I've never actually researched who it might be. But I feel like that version, the Johnny Freedom version, it's a little more stark. There's something a little more convincing in it. Ain't I right? Your followers have been a bearded, bathless bunch. And what's funny about that is back then, you know, the bearded, bathless bunch were very pro-Russia. There were a lot of people, you know, despite the Red Scare and all the hysteria and madness that went on with people accusing Americans of being commies, you know, there were also a lot of communists in the United States who were sympathetic to Russia. And that was a problem because Russia was committing violence on a massive institutional scale. And it's something that people still overlook. They often overlook it in ways that they don't overlook other institutional violence from governments of that era. So Russia gets a pass. But what's funny is while communist Russia often gets a pass from the left, modern Russia really doesn't. And we've seen this interesting role reversal where for decades, during the height of the Soviet Union, The conservatives were just so paranoid. Russia was responsible for everything. Everything going wrong in the United States. Rock and roll, the hippie movement. Virtually everything that could be going wrong in the United States was because of Russia. And it was the conservatives, it was the right wing who felt that way. And they were wrong, of course. And now we live in this time when the same exact attitudes are being held toward Russia, but Russia is no longer communist, and it's the far left who feels like Russia is somehow influencing everything negatively in this country. They're somehow swinging the election. On one hand, it's funny, because the left can't really decide if the people who voted the current guy into office are just really dumb, hateful, and racist, or if somehow this other country pulled all the strings and rigged it. It's like, you can't, you know, which is it? Are the people who believe different than you just that dumb and that bad? Or is it just all rigged by some foreign power with their fake news? And as much as it pains me to use a phrase like fake news on here at all, to even give any kind of life to that phrase on here, I'm not going to suffer for it. Because pain and suffering, turns out, are different, you know. Pain often isn't a choice, but you can choose to suffer or not from pain in a lot of cases. Not always, you know, there are some pains that are horrible, but you can choose whether or not to suffer. So I'm not going to suffer because I decided to use the phrase fake news. But it is funny how that phrase really took off, and Russia was just single-handedly changing everything. They're running our country, man. It's the same level of hysteria that people had during the height of the Soviet Union. And what's so funny about fake news is the same sort of people who throw that out there don't realize how much fake news governs their own life. Whenever they are dishonest with themselves, whenever those people are unwilling to take responsibility for their own actions, whenever they, you know, overlook the fact that their boyfriend cheats on them, whenever they turn a blind eye to that, that's fake news. Fake news is the lie that each person tells themselves to justify their own shitty behavior. It's not some article. It's not some clickbait article that ended up on Facebook that somehow changed the entire course of history. Fake news is the bullshit that you do to yourself. And, you know, if people recognize that, they'd be a lot better off than pointing their fingers over across the water. Not to say that Russia of today is some, not to say that they're great, not to say that they're great on some moral level. I mean, there's a lot wrong over there. There's a lot that's wrong over there. Probably not as wrong as it was during the height of the Soviet Union, though, which is funny. A lot more violence, a lot more bloodshed was going on then than in modern-day Russia. And that says a lot because, you know, modern-day Russia is pretty fucking bad. I'll admit that. But it goes back to that no true Scotsman thing because, interestingly, my generation really kind of... Communism kind of had this whole new life with my generation. I started to see it in high school. I had friends who were kind of like indie or punk kids and that kind of thing. And they would kind of joke around about communism, about socialism. And then they kind of started to take those beliefs on. And there's nothing wrong with the core beliefs of socialism and communism, that it's basic intent. If you look at it at face value, there's nothing wrong with that. It's basically like saying, be nice to people and make sure that everybody has a chance, you know, in life. There's nothing wrong with those. But I wonder why people have grabbed hold of the words communism and socialism, because so much in virtually every country that's adopted it, so much bad has happened. And so you'd think people would want to get away from those words. You'd think people would want to get away from the words communism, socialism. Like Johnny Freedom said, communism, socialism, there's very little difference between the two. but you'd think people would want to get away from that because you can still tackle the core ideas that those isms supposedly represent. And you'd think that people would want to repackage them. Everyone's afraid of neo-Nazism and this repackaging of fascism and repackaging it of these far right authoritarian ideas. And I'm glad they are. I'm glad that's a concern. I'm glad that people are aware that these things can be repackaged. But it's sort of interesting to me that people are willing to not try to repackage socialism and communism, and they're willing to wave the same banner that these massive, oppressive, murderous governments waved. It's like, oh, you know, no true Scotsman, which, if you're not familiar with that trope, it's just the idea that if someone from a group does something and you're part of that group or you're sympathetic to that group, you can always say, oh, well, he doesn't represent the real thing. Oh, Russia, they don't represent real communism. The Soviet Union, despite being the biggest, most influential communist government of all time, they don't represent real communism. That was sort of the argument, is sort of the argument. And it's no true Scotsman, because it's like, I don't know where that comes from. It might come from a movie or a book, but I like that trope. I like that idea. It makes it easy to understand. Where, you know, it's like if someone does something in the name of any ideology, anything really, if they do something in the name of that, people who also are acting in the name of that can just always distance themselves from it by saying, well, he's not the real thing. He's not really living it. He's not really representing it. And it's different when it's an individual. I understand when it's an individual. I think you can look at Islam, where when someone does, like when that guy shot up the gay nightclub in Florida and he did it in the name of ISIS, I can see where, you know, Muslims are able to say, well, that lone wolf wasn't representing the whole of Islam. I understand in situations like that. However, when you have entire governments, when you have entire decades of history and blood, you know, I don't see how you can really distance yourself from it or distance the actions of an entire government, and not just one government, but many governments worldwide, many nations that are still around today. I mean, you look at North Korea, and I'm sure everybody who listens to this show just loves the fact that I'm going on some political rant here about communism and socialism, but you know, I like that era of music because I feel like it's still relevant. I like that Cold War subject matter because I do feel like it's still relevant, even though the tables have been turned. And that's just what's so funny to me. If you were to tell people in the 1960s through 1980s that, you know, someday, not very long from now, people, all you people who are, you know, just terrified of Russia are going to be sympathetic toward them, and all you people who are sympathetic toward Russia are going to be absolutely terrified. You guys are just going to swap. And so many things throughout history are just swapping. We just swap words and names for things. We all get our turn. You know, we all get our turn to support things and then go against things. It's just kind of the way the pendulum swings. And in the bigger picture, Russia is just Russia. You know, regardless of what ideological system is there, regardless of what the government is, in the grand scope of things, we're just going to look back at Russia as Russia. Profound, I know. Russia's just Russia. Russia's just Russia. Well, if you haven't stopped listening yet, if you ain't turned this off, I have a song that's not an anti-communist hymn, and it's not going to provoke any further ranting and raving. And it's by Suzanne and the Band-Aids. And hopefully this will put a Band-Aid on that red river that I just opened up there. Suzanne and the Band-Aids. And it's Suzanne with a Z. That always interests me. Suzanne with a Z. Because you see it with an S and it always looks awkward, like Susan. Susan. But Suzanne, it's like neither one seems to really work for me. Suzanne and Susan. Suzanne and Susan, there's very little difference between the two. Neither of them work. They're like communism and socialism. Neither of them work. Susie and the Band-Aids. Suzanne and the Band-Aids. The song title is You May Never Know, which, as a person who likes mysteries left mysterious, that's a great title. You May Never Know. Be willing to not uncover or invest, you know, you be willing to not know the answer to things. Be willing to just leave things open and be comfortable with the fact that you may never know.
You may never know that I love you or the tears that are shed for you. You think that I long for another wind, darling, I'm really true. You mock me when I'm kissing you, but I still love you though. You won't believe that I love you, and perhaps you'll never know, not know. There are no words to tell you what I feel in my heart for you. But what's the use of telling you when you treat me like you do? Maybe someday you'll realize and teardrops will flow. Or could it be, or could it be that you may never know? Find it soon, cause every so often you slip and give a tender look beneath the moon. Oh, you can't know the great extent to which my love goes. Maybe you'll know before eternity, or maybe you'll never know.
Men dina falska löften passar inte mig. Ge dem åt någon annan som ännu tror på sagor. Jag har redan kommit över det där jag känner för dig. Ja, inte går jag här och sörjer med pojkar. Första gången när jag mötte dig, vi satt där ner på fiket och du låg mot mig. Hjärtat nästan stannade, du sa det med detsamma. Det är min bil, den där där ute, kom ta en sväng med mig. En stund av lycka som jag kände då, kan du ej förstå. Efter kväll, min vän, träffades vi igen. Allting gick jag på. Trodde på vad du sa, fick då en chock den dag när jag förstod att du drev med mig så. Det händer då och då att jag får stå och se på alla andra flickor som du åker med. Visst får jag försöka och du kan ta och braka. Nu förstår jag att för dig jag var en leksakplåt. Den tror jag inte på, det får du förstå. Väl efter väl, min vän, träffades vi igen. Allting gick jag på. Trodde på vad du sa, fick då en fock en dag när jag förstod att du drev med mig så. Det händer då och då att jag förstår och ser och alla andra flickor som du åker med. Visst får jag försöka och du kan ta och braka. Nu förstår jag att för dig jag var en leksakplåt. Så dina löften tror jag inte på, det får du förstå.
Suzanne and the Band-Aids there were followed up with Kringlorna, a Swedish duo of women from 1963. Kringlorna, one word, and that song was called Falska Loften, which means fake ceilings, what that means in the context of that song, as Suzanne and the Band-Aid said, you may never know, because I certainly don't. But a song that sounds like that, by two Swedish women called Fake Ceilings, that translates to Fake Ceilings, that does something to my imagination that few things do. I don't need to know what that song says. I don't need to know what the lyrics say. Fake Ceilings. This last song certainly deals with the subject of fake ceilings in its own roundabout way. It's a song that everybody should know, but I feel like this is one of the best versions I've ever heard. So good, in fact, that I never thought I would ever play any version of this song on this show. Nothing against the song, but it's just, you'll know why I'm saying that. The song is by the Baysiders, and it's going to close this episode out. It's a good close to the 5-year anniversary, episode 55 meltdown that this has been. The Baysiders, Over the Rainbow. And it's the exact song that you know, the rainbow that you know, the fake ceiling that is a rainbow, over the rainbow, beyond the fake ceiling. The Baysiders, Over the Rainbow. This version is chilling, and it really reinforces how good the lyrics and the melody, everything that went into this song, I took it for granted. I took how good this song truly was for granted until I heard this version by the Baysiders. Over the Rainbow. Over the Rainbow, stepping on stars, burning the top of your head on the sun, and blinding yourself with the moon.
Oh, This land is mine. God gave this land to me. This brave, this golden land to me. And when the morning sun reveals her hills and plains, I see a land where children can run free. So take my hand and walk this land with me, and walk this lovely land with me. Though I am just a man, when you are by my side, with the help of God, I know I can be strong.
Until I die, this land is mine.